This week marked an historic moment. For only the fourth time in U.S. history, the House of Representatives passed a resolution formalizing public impeachment procedures against the president. Meanwhile, the race to head the Democratic ticket has shrunk by one. Here to help make sense of it all are Marcus and Gerson. That's Washington Post columnist Ruth Marcus and syndicated columnist Michael Gerson, also with The Washington Post. Mark Shields and David Brooks are away, but you both are here. Happy Friday, and thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
A lot to cover. Let's start with a little bit of news we already have tonight on the impeachment process. Ruth, there's some reporting late tonight about details from one of the testimonies earlier this week. This was a man named Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. It's being reported now that he, as a member of the National Security Staff in the White House, was on that call between President Trump and President Zelensky, and that he was instructed after that call by a top White House lawyer not to discuss that call with anyone. When you take into account all the reports about testimony this week, what are your takeaways?
Well, for a conversation that the president has told us was so perfect, he's going to read it to us in a fireside chat. There certainly was a lot of alarm about this conversation. It's difficult to tell whether this was a lawyer being careful and just simply telling the people he advises not to make more of this conversation than there was, or whether this was a lawyer trying to cover up and conceal this conversation. It's one of the many things that we need to know more about, and it's one of the many things that we've learned in the last several weeks that really makes this impeachment inquiry so central and so essential, and just means that we cannot avert our eyes from this and go on with the election as if we didn't know what was going on here.
Michael, as Ruth mentions, the president keeps saying it was a perfect phone call. Vice President Pence has also said there was no quid pro quo. He said this several times in an interview with our own Judy Woodruff earlier this week. The more information we get, it seems to contradict those two claims.
Well, I think it's fair to say that the professionals, the non-political appointees that were involved in this process from state and NSC, were deeply concerned contemporaneously when they found out about it. And they, you know, brought it up to superiors and didn't get much result. Even the political appointees that were involved in this, however, didn't exonerate the president. They actually pretty much confirmed the account from the whistleblower. So, the effect of all this is to take away the argument, no quid pro quo. That argument doesn't work anymore. It's been, you know, deflated and defeated. And I think Republicans are now driven to other positions because that has been taken away.
Well, we'll see if they let it be taken away, but I completely agree with Michael. Asked and answered on quid pro quo. That was the significance of this week. Not only Ambassador Taylor from previous week, but Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and Tim Morrison, another aide at the National Security Council, reaffirmed quid pro quo. The second question is, okay, if you don't have there's no quid pro quo argument, do you have the unfairness argument? That's the other significance of this week, is we finally have debate about whether we should have had it earlier, a resolution that will set forward what the procedures should be going forward. Republicans are claiming that this is deeply unfair and the whole thing is tainted by the previous unfairness. But I guess I would ask them if they had video, if the impeachment inquiry came up with video of the president shooting someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue, would they say we should ignore that because the proceedings were unfair? They weren't, and they shouldn't ignore anything. And they've set out fair proceedings going forward.
Well, what about the process here, Michael? Because that is the core of the Republicans' protest at this point, right? That the process has been unfair, as it looks like we're moving into an open public hearing set now. What about those protests? Are those valid?
Well, it seems basically fair, the way what they've outlined. As far as the Judiciary Committee, the president's lawyer gets the right to bring witnesses, challenge witnesses. In fact, we may next week get a lot of the closed hearing information come out next week as far as the transcripts of these other things. So there's a degree of transparency there that I think just, makes intuitive sense.
And
But the Republicans love to talk about process because they don't want to talk about substance. Well, I mean, they're happy when they can talk about process in this case because their arguments are pretty weak otherwise.
If these procedures aren't fair, then they weren't fair to Bill Clinton because they're essentially the same procedures. Yeah.
Let me ask you about how some of these messages and information are going over with the American public, because we heard Judy ask this of Vice President Biden earlier. Is there a potential political cost for Democrats here? We saw that House vote really strictly along party lines. Take a look at this poll now, the new number numbers from the Washington Post and ABC News. People were asked, should Congress impeach and remove President Trump from office? That's obviously a different bar, impeach and remove. But the country is very evenly divided when it comes to that. What do you say to that, Ruth? Is there a political cost for how this is moving forward now for Democrats?
Well, one thing I would say to it is, I suggested this before, it doesn't matter. This conduct is serious enough that it needs to be taken seriously, political cost or not. And the other thing I would say is that if you look at those numbers, which show a very divided country, but look back at numbers from July before the Ukraine story broke, when the question was asked not whether he should be impeached and removed from office, which is a dramatic outcome, but simply whether an impeachment inquiry should go forward, the number was 37%. So from 37% supporting an inquiry going forward to 49% supporting removing him from office, that's a dramatic change. And the reason for that dramatic change is because the facts have emerged that people understand this is something serious going on.
Michael, very briefly, moving into next week, there are some key White House officials who have been invited to testify. What do you think we'll be hearing next week, and could it change the narrative at all?
Well, I think that Bolton holds a lot of power in his hands right now. I don't know when he might appear, but this is a case where he could confirm a lot of things and have some significant influence. And I think as we move into the public hearings, some of these witnesses, like the lieutenant colonel, are going to be great witnesses.
In his dress blues. Right? Imagine that.
Exactly. So I think, you know, Democrats can look forward to that, I think, and some of those witnesses will be very effective.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the 2020 race. We had some news on that front as well tonight, as we reported earlier. The field has been narrowed by one on the Democratic primary front. Beto O'Rourke announced today he is dropping out of the race, saying, though it is difficult to accept, it's clear to me now this campaign does not have the means to move forward successfully. What does that say to you, Ruth?
He didn't have the money. This crowded field has made it all but impossible for individuals who might otherwise have broken through to break through. Beto O'Rourke just 2 years ago was the new thing, but this cycle, there's a new thing in the form of Pete Buttigieg. And I'm sorry in a sense that he didn't make the decision to run for the Senate in Texas again, because I think he would have had a better shot at that, and I think it might have been better both for him and the country.
And he took positions, though, in the campaign that would make a run in Texas impossible, in my view. When
that
you come
true.
Out against tax exemptions for churches that disapprove gay marriage.
And take
come
guns.
Out gun confiscation. I mean, you know, I think Trump's support survives on fear, and he justified those fears for a lot of people. I think it's better for the Democratic Party that he's gone.
What does it say to you about him leaving now? Where do his supporters go? Given some of the movement we've seen recently off of those fundraising numbers, right? We saw Judy asking Vice President Biden about some of the struggles he had with fundraising, what some would say is a meager $15 million in the end of the last quarter. Kamala Harris restructuring her campaign, probably under financial pressure there, too. This is a key moment in that race. Where does his crowd go?
Well, there's some winnowing going on in the race. I don't think his crowd was large enough to make much of a difference, to be honest. But he certainly represented a kind of liberal idealism in the race. And there are others that take that up. I mean, the candidate that has risen over the last few weeks and months is Elizabeth Warren. And she now has her plan out about how to pay for Medicare for all. And I think the reaction to that, the way that the views settle on it, is going to determine whether people think she can win or not.
And very briefly, Ruben, 30 seconds. Has she done a good job defending that now?
Well, kudos to anybody who puts out a plan with some meat on the bones and some explanation of what she thinks it's going to cost and how she thinks it's going to pay for it. But I'm going to quote Nancy Pelosi here on Medicare for All. There's a comfort level that people have with their current private insurance. And if that is to be phased out, let's talk about it, but let's not just have one bill that would do that. And she questions whether you can win the Electoral College with that message. I think that's a serious question for Democrats.
That's going to be a conversation to continue there for sure. Ruth Marcus and Michael Gerson, thank you so much for being here.